Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan, and you're listening at CindySheehanSoapbox.com. Today is the week before 9/11, the ninth anniversary of the attack on the U.S. by whoever attacked us on 9/11. And so today I'm going to have Bob McElvain on my show. His son Bobby was killed on that day, and he's been on a tireless crusade since then for truth, and he brings a lot of information and a lot of credibility, I think, to the 9/11 truth movement. Bob, welcome to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox.
Thank you.
Thank you for being on the show today. So I think, first of all, what I would like to do is to have you tell me and my listeners about your son, Bobby.
All right, Bobby, this is still tough to do.
I know.
Bobby was 26. Well, we're from Orland, Pennsylvania, right outside of Philadelphia, suburb of Philadelphia. I graduated high school, Upper Dublin High School. I went to Princeton University, majored in English, minored in African-American literature. But went to New York, of course, to work. You got to work before you do anything. But he always wanted to be a writer. And he got a job in a couple publishing companies up in New York City. And that's what he did for about, 3 years. Then he got a job at a PR firm. And his only job was, during this time, he was just about to get his MBA, too. His only client in the PR firm was Merrill Lynch, and Merrill Lynch liked him so much, they hired him. And it was about, I guess, a month before 9/11, and they hired him as Assistant Vice President of Media Relations. What that means, I have no idea. I don't think anybody knew what it meant, but they just wanted him there. He was just a terrific writer, and he always wanted to be a writer. He was at Princeton, a very conservative school, but a very progressive person. He founded a progressive newspaper at Princeton, and so he's just involved in everything. But he just he had just started at Merrill Lynch, and on that day, he wasn't supposed to be at the North Tower at the towers, and he came down the subway. He lived at 66 between 1st and 2nd. Came down the subway, get off at the. And I've been piecing this together. I mean, I spent a lot of time on 9/11 itself. But I spent a lot of time trying to find out exactly to the second what happened to my son as far as, you know, how much he suffered. Did he suffer? Did he know what was happening? Because we didn't get any cell phone calls from him, and we know we would have. And a lot of cell phone calls went into his phone, so we know he had his phone, but no one ever heard from him. So I spend a lot of time doing that, finding out exactly what has happened, and I feel I do by this time because I've talked to the doctors that examined him. But anyway, he got off at Fulton Street and walked over to the towers, and everybody was expecting him at work, but he was supposed to be working 9, and he decided to go in the North Tower because there was a meeting at the a seminar up on the 106th floor. And I've come to the conclusion that he died instantly, either walking into the tower, into his lobby, or as he entered the lobby, because there was a huge explosion down there. So I think he died instantly. And we, you know, he's one of the first 10 bodies found, and believe it or not, we were one of the lucky ones that brought him home. We actually brought him home and buried him. Really remarkable person. You know, saying, and writing was his niche. He was going to be a writer because he absorbed books. He just consumed books, and he had a diary, and he left diaries. So we had all these diaries that we've been reading, you know, ever since, you know, when we get to... You know, the nerve to do it.
The strength, yes, I know. I know that's very hard, Bob, because you know very well that my son Casey was killed in Iraq 6 years ago, and that's one of the hardest parts is to talk about it because it is so very painful. But I think that the pain and the heart and the compassion that we have helps connect people, and so. We just, you know, I know I and you continue to do this hard thing of trying to connect people to the pain and the misery so we can perhaps one day make it end. And I appreciate you telling us about your son to bring him to life for me and my listeners.
Well, I'm glad. I mean, you know, that's one of the problems. It's amazing. People are afraid to talk about it because they feel that they're, you know, upsetting you. And that's the worst thing in the world, because you certainly want to talk about your son.
Right.
You know? And when no one wants to talk about it, that's even worse. So I'd rather have you get upset for a couple of minutes and talk mm-hmm. about him. But the fact that no one wants to bring it up is just, that's worse. Because that means, you know, people are either forgotten or just don't want to talk about him. You know,
well, you know how they want to reduce our children to numbers, like the 3,000 killed on 9/11, the 4,427 killed in Iraq. And so I think it's really important to personalize this issue to make it relevant to people.
Oh, most certainly. And I, you know, before I did, you know, well, I've done a lot of things before. You know, as soon as Bobby died, I got involved in a group called Peaceful Tomorrows, but I would speak around the world, and I truly want to tell people I don't want to be looked at as a victim, because we're just talking, you know, the millions of people who've died in the,
right.
you know, just since 1950, and so many children, and so many, you know, so many parents, you know. It's very difficult for people to empathize if they've never gone through it or don't see it. But, you know, the parents in Iraq, the parents in Guatemala, the parents in Afghanistan, the parents in the United States, every parent suffers the same. And that's, you know I've always tried to get that message, of course, because, I sort of feel guilty that, we look at 9/11, talking about honoring the 9/11 family members, and we read the 3,000 family members. But, again, you know, you should be reading millions of people. Yeah, because it's just, this is the way the world works, and it's horrible. So, you know, my son's not the only innocent civilian that's died. Your son's
right.
not the only soldier that's died, and it's just, it's a waste of life as far as I'm concerned. It just, it can't happen. But so I did that for quite a while for this group called Peaceful Tomorrows. You know, I would go, you know, I traveled around in Japan, I was in Italy, I was in Bogota, and just talking the violence, the civilian deaths because of violence that emanates from governmental policy, you know. So, and that did a lot for me, because you just meet people around the world, and it's really important to understand what everyone's going through. That helps me a lot, instead of looking at myself and feeling sorry for myself. Although you always get upset when I talk about Bobby. But
I agree. That brings up my next question. I want the truth about what happened on 9/11. I don't know what happened on 9/11. I've seen you speak, and I've seen things online, you know, that you've said, saying that our government did 9/11. What do you think that our government planned it and carried it out, or do you think that, you know, the people? I mean, I don't believe the official story, but don't you think that the people would have had a valid grievance that if it was Muslims that attacked us on 9/11,
can I just quickly go back to what I was talking about of Peaceful Tomorrows? Certainly after 9/11, I had no clue what was going on. I mean, you know, just the shock of what happened, losing your son, it took 6 months before you even thought about it, because there was so, you know, every
right.
day you'd be getting letters,
right.
you'd get food, you know, it was just a constant thing. And then after 6 months, everybody then forgets you. And then you start grieving. And I just didn't think about it, but I would go on the internet and I would look at things, and about how Tenet said that the light was blinking red about what was happening as far as terrorism was concerned. But anyway, I joined Peaceful Tomorrows because I felt I had to do something, and I immediately, after 9/11, I did not want to go to war. I still looked at it as, geez, 19 guys killed 3,000 people, but, you know, should we punish the rest of the world for that? I mean, to me, it was an absurd idea that you go to war, because, again, people just die in wars. That's all, innocent people, plus soldiers. So anyway, I joined Peaceful Tomorrows, and I got the opportunity to go around, and I actually did speak. And I spoke at Congress, I spoke at a lot of places, and I would talk about the blowback of 9/11, which in essence is our foreign policy created this hate, created these circumstances that people want to attack us. And I felt good about that. And I, you can't believe how many times I would speak in high schools, I would speak in colleges, and again around the world. I got an invitation to go down to Bogota, Colombia, to talk on a conference on violence where you had people from Indonesia, Chechnya, all throughout South and Central America. And it really, it made me feel good, and then to see the victims. And again, I would talk about blowback. But then, of course, then I started going to the 9/11 Commission hearings. And I made 95% of them. Well, and what really turned me around, you know, you hear stories of, you know, Richard Clark apologized to the people that they weren't ready, that there was a wall between the intelligence and the government. But the thing that finally turned me around, I remember, when, I don't know the exact date, but when Condoleezza Rice came up to speak, and you just realized it was a sham. She stood there, and she just kept making excuses. And then, and each commissioner, you know, they're only allowed 5 minutes when they're supposedly. Now, I want to come out right now and say that we never had an investigation. I'll just get that into a minute. So, they, in other words, they weren't trying to investigate her. They were just trying to be polite to her. Now, Benveniste would come out with a statement. He says, I want you to answer this question. She says, well, you have to keep in mind the historical perspective. And Benveniste would get upset and say, please answer the question. Well, she'd just keep throwing the ball around. So the point is, his question was over. They had to go to the next one. Well, after that, I just finally got up. I walked out. I had an interview with Canadian Broadcasting. And I walked back to him. I've never been so upset in my life. And I said, this is all effing bullshit. Excuse my language, but that's exactly what I said. And I said, this whole thing's a sham. They're all lying. They're all covering this up. And then from that day on, I just had so much anger, and I've carried the anger. It's very important for me to carry the anger, that, first of all, my son was murdered. We never had an investigation. It was the commissioner says it was a sham. The commissioner said that the Pentagon lied to them. So then I gave up Peaceful Tomorrows, and then I just did my research. I figured, well, if we'd never had an investigation, then that's my job. My son was murdered, and I have to investigate it. And I've spent every single day of my life since that time looking into 9/11. So I've made the investigation, but because I'm not a college professor, or I'm not part of the government, people will say, well, who are you? Well, I'm somebody. I put a lot of work into this. It was my son was murdered, and I have no questions that the – and when you say government, it's, you know, government's a pretty – it is a nebulous thing because there's so many people in government, but don't forget in the intelligence community you have like over 750,000 people. And my big thing on 9/11, it was an impossibility that four planes could fly around in the airspace for 2 hours without not being intercepted. I'm not saying being shot down, but at least being intercepted. And this is where it comes in, the lies that the Pentagon people told during the commission. Why are they covering it up? So I've came to my own summation that, well, I feel that they were involved in it, the intelligence community around the world. Look what's happened in the world. We have torture now. We have preemptive strikes, preemptive warfare. The whole world has changed because of 9/11. And it's just because at first when I said that only 19 people did this, well, the world shouldn't change like that. But then when you look into it, if you investigate it more, for these 19 people to supposedly do what they did with those airplanes, break down the security of the United States, like, it's just an impossibility, an absolute impossibility. And, you know, Cindy, I wish someone could prove me wrong. Anyone. I wish someone could sit me down for 3 hours and say, look, this is why you're wrong. But the only thing I'll get is, oh, you're a wacko. You're a conspiracy theorist. But the whole story is a conspiracy theorist. And the country does things like that. Look at Vietnam. You know, look at all the people died there. So for people to think that they wouldn't do something like that, look how the world has changed. I mean, you know, Afghanistan, they had plans to attack Afghanistan before 9/11. So this is what governments do, you know, and so, yeah, there's no question in my mind. And you know, that's what intelligence around the world does. The nation state is more important. So what's 3,000 people? You know, that's nothing compared to, you know, God, we have in Iraq already, 1 million people, all the people, you know, human lives don't mean anything to these people in government. It's the nation state, the Machiavellian philosophy. The ends justify the means. Now we can go back to the 80s with Oliver North. You know, they knew drugs were coming in the United States. They don't care if people get drugged out or go to jail, but it supports their black ops operations, you know? So, you know, to me, to understand our history and know it backwards and forwards, and the horrible things that we've done for the good, supposedly for the good of democracy, to spread democracy, well, if we could just sit down and teach everyone that, then they would say, geez, maybe you're right, you know, because most people just think you grow up thinking, well, we're an exceptional country. How could we possibly do something like that? And that's the way people feel. And who's going to put the time and effort into looking at it? Well, that's my job. And that's why I'll speak on it for the rest of my life, because that's my obligation to my son. So that's how I evolved into this.
I have a book online called Myth America, 20 Greatest Myths of the Robber Class and the Case for Revolution. And I recount a story about a conversation I had with a so-called progressive. And he came up to me and said, Cindy, you know, you really damage your credibility when you say that 9/11 was an inside job and when you say that Israel was responsible for 9/11. And I said, first of all, sir, I don't say 9/11 was an inside job, and I never have said Israel was responsible for it. I said, who do you think committed 9/11? Who do you think was responsible for it? And he said, I believe the official story. And I said, well, what do you think about Iraq? And he goes, oh, George Bush and those people lied about Iraq, and they lied about weapons of mass destruction. They lied about the connection between Al-Qaeda, and it was just a lie from beginning to end. I said, well, then why do you trust what they say about 9/11? If they lied about Iraq, couldn't they be lying about 9/11? And this man goes, yeah, and space aliens could have taken down the Twin Towers, too. So do you see the same disconnect in so-called progressives,
well, it's actually worse with the progressives. And it's just,
right.
It's just mind-boggling, because I guess they want to maintain their status quo. I'll tell you what, I was very involved with the National Organization for Peace and Justice, you know, the ones that are going to be organizing the new march down in October down in Washington.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I'm sure you were involved with them, right? They're the ones that organized the first march in New York City, or Washington, D.C., New York. But anyway, I went to them, you know, and I just got so upset. In fact, I got upset at my group, because I went to one of their national meetings up in New York City. And I said, why aren't we talking about 9/11? And they said, well, it's just, you know, I said, well, this is why we're in war. This is why we went to Afghanistan. This is why we want to go to Iraq. 9/11's, to me, the red herring of the whole thing. But they would just not talk about it. They didn't want to talk about it. They didn't want to hear anything of it. So, you know, I've given up on, you know, I can't even think of being a Democrat or a Republican. I mean, I can't even think of voting, because it's just a coward's. And, you know, if I can just, no one will sit down and listen. Like, if anybody ever debates, you say, did you ever read the 9/11 Commission book? And, of course, no one's read that. Do you know anyone that's read it from cover to cover? No one's read it. You know, it's sort of a boring work that, you know, and they just can't do anything with it. But, you know, someone like that, they'll talk that way, and you say, well, what about the story of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed? What about the entire story of 9/11? It's all based on torture right there. And the commission admitted that people lied. The Pentagon lied about the whole thing. Well, if the Pentagon lied, they're the ones that are supposed to protect us. So it's just, it goes back to that, Cindy, that they don't want to put the work in. They still listen to the news, and you have, you know, you have Rachel Maddow, and then you know, the right and the left talking, supposedly. Well, that whole dichotomy itself is ridiculous. You know, everything is a distraction, and we're not going to get any truth to anything unless, you know, we keep speaking up, or I keep speaking up, as far as 9/11 is concerned. But I have no time for any. I mean, you know, I can't even be around a Republican, a Democrat. I just, you know, if someone comes to my door, the first thing I'll bring up to them, a politician, I just bring up 9/11. You know, they have to leave.
Right. Because we were attacked, and we have to go after the people that attacked us. The other night, Barack Obama, or around this whole supposed end of the Iraq War, saying there's still people out there that want to do harm to Americans, and I think there are, but I think they reside, you know, in Washington, D.C., is the people that want to do harm to this world and to Americans. But with we have about 5 minutes left, and what, in a perfect world, what would you like to see happen? Who, first of all, what would you like to see happen, and who would you like to be held responsible for what happened to your son Bobby on 9/11, which really led to my son's death and so much heartache that is just really unimaginable?
Oh, it is, and it's unimaginable around the world. But I, you know, I could care less if anybody went to jail. I just wanted to come out that the whole world knows that the United States, you know, the intelligence community, hey, I don't care what anyone says, you know, Bush and Cheney have to be, they were at the helm, they have to be held accountable. They have to be held guilty. And, you know, General Myers, Dick Eberhardt, I mean, General Myers lied through his teeth during the 9/11 commission hearing. Hey, all the commissioners, you know, they know what happened. I mean, you know, I'm investigating just the murder of my son. He was blown up in the lobby. And the 9/11 commission lied about that, saying a big fireball comes down and blows out. Well, he had no burns on him. He had postmortem burns, so he didn't die from a fireball. He died from a burn. He was, you know, obliterated in the chest and the face. So, you know, and if people don't go to jail, it's just that if it, because of our accountability, if suddenly we have peace in the Middle East, I could care less if one person went to jail. But the fact that people have to understand that nations do evil things for the good of the nation. And that's, if people start thinking that way around the world, hey, if suddenly we have an honorable negotiation between Israel and Pakistan, the Palestinians, I'd be happy. You know, if suddenly, because of all this, they figure, well, we better bring peace because this 9/11 truth is getting closer. People are going to be out. That's fine if we have peace, because we just have to stop killing the innocent civilians. My son, just one more innocent civilian that's been killed in the last, I mean, millions upon millions of them. So
right.
I'd rather see
for,
peace.
For a few centuries here in the United States.
Right.
But I
think maybe if we get close and more people suddenly realize it, and I know more people around the world realize that this, you know, first of all, at least admit that the whole story was a lie, and then can surmise from themselves by just looking at some information. And so maybe because of all this, because of your all your activities, and so many people are so upset that maybe, you know, we will find some peace. I don't know. It's a shot in the dark, but I'd rather see peace in the world than bring them accountable.
Right.
But I think in the process of bringing them accountable, pardon me?
I'd like to see accountability. I'd like to see some justice. I think healing, true healing, can't happen without justice. And, you know, we just keep wanting to shove these things under the carpet and not think about them and not examine them. And we can't. We can't move forward. We can't turn the page, like Barack Obama says, without justice.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I mean, of course I want justice, but I just don't feel it's going to happen. I'll keep plugging away, and that's my job in life because that's my obligation in life. But I just, you know, studying and reading so much about Iran-Contra, what came out of there, you know, you got two slaps on the wrist with Weinberger and Oliver North.
Yep.
You know, Reagan and Bush should have been hung. I mean, if you have you hang people for treason, they should have both been hung. You know, but the status quo and the good of the nation, you know, if people really came close to this, finding people accountable, then people are going to disappear. But maybe that
we think that justice could also, like, be a preventive measure in the future for these kind of things to happen. So we just have a couple minutes left, Bob, and I want to thank you again for your work and for coming on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. I can't believe that 25 minutes has already passed.
Yeah, I know.
But are we going to see each other on September 11th? This show is going to air on, I think, the 7th, on the Sunday before September 11th, or 6th or 7th. Are you going to be in New York City on the 11th for that?
Oh, yeah. We go
conference?
Up. No. We have a support group in Philadelphia, and we go up to Ground Zero and have dinner on the day night before, and then we go to Ground Zero. Jess, my other son has two grandkids, so we take them down to Ground Zero. Then we meet all of Bobby's friends.
Well, I'll be thinking of you on that day, and thanks for the work you do. And if my listeners, do you have a website or anything? If my listeners have any more questions for you, they can get a hold of you?
R Mac, M-A-C-K, 322 at Yahoo.
R Mac.
Yeah, M-A-C-K.
322 at Yahoo.
Yeah.
Well, again, thanks for your work, and thanks for your generosity.
Hey, Cindy, thanks for inviting me, all right? I appreciate it.
And hang in there. We'll talk to you soon.
We've got to hang in there, right?
Right.
All right, thanks, Cindy.
Okay, bye-bye. That was Bob McElvain, 9/11 truth seeker and father of a victim from that day. Thank you for listening to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. I hope you enjoyed the show. I hope you take a few moments this week to reflect on what Bob says, that the basic evilness of nation states and what they will do to protect themselves. And they really, we could be fleas. We could be ants in their estimation, the people who are trying to protect their power and protect their money. So that's what we really need you to do, is reflect on that and to really figure out a way to go forward from here. So I'd like to thank, as always, my engineer, Scott Cuddy, my producer, Mikey, my webmaster, Rich Bowser, you for listening, and my guest, Bob McElvain. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. Thank you.
I must make my witness. Have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. Dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Are running wild in the street. There's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe, and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes. As if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to write to your congressman, because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Cheers.